Welcome, welcome to the Lifting Lindsay podcast. I feel like it's been a while, guys. I'm so glad that everybody seemed to really, really enjoy that creatine episode. That was the last episode. If you haven't had a chance to listen to it and you've had any questions, concerns, wondering if you should take creatine, I would definitely go ahead and give that episode a listen. Today, we're actually going to be talking about muscle loss and the rate of muscle loss and what causes atrophy. So this question came up recently on Instagram because I was talking about everything that's going on with me right now. Now, in the past, I have made it very clear, like, look, guys, 1-2 weeks of not lifting, you're not losing muscle tissue. Like, don't worry about it. Calm down. You're going to be just fine, right? Because there are a lot of accounts out there that sometimes I feel like maybe the influencer knows just enough to kind of do damage and scare people without giving like full context. They don't know enough to be able to really educate people. So I've had so many women as they've been going on vacations, and summertime's coming up. I mean, we still got a few more months, but I'm definitely looking forward to it. It's in the near future. And when people start going on vacations, we have spring break coming up. People start going on vacations and they get scared because they're like, well, what do you do? Do you just bring bands? Like, how can we prevent muscle loss? And they're nervous and scared because they have worked so hard to earn that muscle. So I totally get it, but I'm always very quick to say, look, guys, 1-2 weeks and we're really not seeing muscle loss when people go from lifting weights to not lifting weights. But I do want to dive a little bit more into this because if you think about all of the things that go into building muscle, then pretty much doing the opposite is what's going to cause atrophy. So we're going to be talking about nutrition and protein. We're going to be talking about training, complete detraining versus lowering volume. And we're going to be talking about daily activities because all of these can, on a gradient, be able to show us how much muscle loss and maybe at what rate we're going to experience it. So I'm going to be talking about what is muscle loss too, like even defining muscle hypertrophy. So we're going to be talking about myofibular versus sarcoplasmic, because I feel like that's going to open your eyes to maybe what you're seeing and feeling. And so can kind of calm you down and you're not scared about this process. And then we're going to end the discussion with talking about muscle memory. Although there are debates as to the actual mechanisms of it, we do know that this exists. So I'm just going to kind of go over what do we know about muscle memory? What are we seeing? And so why we probably shouldn't fear about things like this. You know, I get it though. I get it. I am not an easy muscle gainer. I have to work really, really hard for any bit of muscle that I get. So I understand not wanting to see that loss. But I also understand the big picture, and so I'm really not scared about it. Now, how this all came about, this topic came about recently, because I got a question, somebody asking me, well, you said that, you know, a week off of training, you're not going to lose muscle, but then you just barely said you lost muscle. So I'm hearing conflicting messages. That was the message that I got. Let me tell you the story that I was telling on Instagram. And then we're going to go over, like I said, the different types of maybe muscle loss that we're seeing or not muscle loss, and then what affects it to a greater degree. So I was sharing that I am 11 weeks pregnant. Now, I have taken about 3.5 weeks off of training. And for those of you who haven't listened to my Instagram stories, I'll just kind of share briefly what happened. So three and a half weeks ago, we found out two things. We found out that we had lost one of the twins and that I had a hemorrhage. And so because of that, they put me on pelvic rest. And their first instructions, because there can be varying degrees of what that means, right? But their first instructions were just absolutely no working out of any kind, no cardio, no, you know, no speed walking, none of that. They said, you don't need to be on bed rest per se, but you've just got to really lay low kind of thing. Well, the miscarriage hit me really hard. That was our sixth miscarriage. And it also, I was just so excited about the twins. And so that just really kind of put me in mourning, and then taking away the very thing that would help me through a hard time, you know, lifting weights. But I understood I needed to heal, but that was a hard few days. And I honestly laid pretty low. I barely got any steps in, just did bare minimum. And keep in mind, guys, I was going from, you know, steps averaging like 12,000 steps. And so going from, you know, 12,000 plus steps to just physically and emotionally going through this loss and now pelvic rest, and it just kind of hit me pretty hard. Anyway, so I went from that to the first few days, you know, barely even like 1,000 steps. And then I got hit by this awful, awful cold. And you know how they always joke around about how men, like, it's like a cold and it puts them into bed for weeks. Like, that's me. That is literally me. Every time somebody jokes around about that and they're like, it was just a little cold, I'm like, no, I get it though, because my sinuses don't drain very well. So it always turns into a massive infection and it's like miserable with headaches. And this time it like put me between the nausea and the weakness and feeling super sick from the pregnancy plus the cold. I was in bed all week. And so barely getting 1,000 steps. And then I started getting massive migraines. And I was just so grateful that Alex worked from home and that we had a community around us that when they found out about the miscarriage, just swooped in, and family and friends just taking care of us and stopping by and bringing us just food and flowers, but mostly food because I love food and I need food. And I was going through the food aversions too. So I couldn't make meals, but I couldn't eat very many meals either. And I was living off of toast and honey and butter. And that was pretty much it. Major aversions to protein, just any kind of food with any nutrient in it, pretty much. Just nutrient food aversions is what I was dealing with. And it's so funny because you have these ideas of, you know, I have no memory of my previous pregnancies being like this. And I've even asked Alex, like, do I just not remember? It's like a gift from God being like, well, she's not going to have another one if she remembers. Well, I'm just going to wipe that clean, right? Because they talk a lot about the major endorphins post-pregnancy. It's almost like this clearing out process of any of the hard, right? But anyway. So I asked Alex and he goes, no, this pregnancy has been very different. You know, with, he said, Hazel, you had some morning sickness for a few hours and then you were fine. Link, there was barely even that. You continued to lift. He's like, this one is wild because this one, it wasn't just nausea and morning sickness. It was like all day. So you know, you just don't know how things are going to affect you. And I was planning. This was not my plan. I had a great plan. It was an amazing plan. I think God needs to listen to my plans a little bit more often because I was gonna be rocking this. But reality hits, and that it doesn't always turn out that way. And I had to practice being mentally flexible. And what I mean by that is there would be like some pity party moments in bed because I was just like sick of being in bed. And then there were just like, I was overwhelmed with gratitude. And then I'm like, no, I got to be mentally flexible, Lindsay. This is a great time to practice like all of these principles you love studying. And I'd go from that. And then I'd go back to my pity party. And it's like, you know, it's all over the board. But I'm like, hey, look, I was trying. I'm trying to, you know, practice and work through the fact that this was pregnancy was not going as I had experienced before and stuff. But anyways, so it turns out there was just one thing after another. I started having some massive migraines that actually kept me in bed too. And pretty soon, before I know it, 3.5 weeks have gone by and I have been mostly bedridden, eating barely, like just whatever it was that I could keep down that sounded good. And so it definitely was not, you know, working out, getting steps, not eating my usual nutrient dense and protein foods. It was just, I was in pure survival. That was it. That was it. That's just like all I've been focusing on. So I was sharing this in stories that it's been interesting because on last Friday, I got the go ahead to start, you know, incorporating lower body workouts again, just making sure I didn't do really, really heavy deadlift or squats to put a lot of pressure on the pelvic floor as I continue to heal. But that was really exciting. And I had just some, honestly, today, Monday, this is March 25th. This has been the first day in 2 months that, well, maybe like a month and a half that I've actually like woke up not feeling just crummy, just sick. And so that was really exciting. But then there's this problem. I'm like, oh, but if I'm not sick, then, you know, there's that worry of because we have lost had a lot of miscarriages around 11 to 13 weeks. So we're always a bit nervous about that. But anyways, today has been a great day. I was able to wake up, have high energy. So I was able to get into the gym and work out. But I was sharing on stories, you know, I go from being very active, feeling very, very strong to getting out of breath, just getting on my walking pad, barely walking. Like this has been definitely a practice in flexibility. And but anyway, so I was sharing in Instagram stories that it's interesting because my weight has stayed the same, but my body composition has greatly changed. So I have seen an increase in body fat and a decrease in muscle size. So as I share these things, I just really want to make it clear that this is just factual. I'm pregnant, guys. I understand that. I love the process. I love being fit. I love being strong. I've been doing this for a while. I feel like I'm getting older. Like I feel like my priorities are just, they're just different. I don't know. To me, I'm like, this is a gain. This is 100% a gain. Women have messaged me saying, well, do you feel like, you know, are you worried that you've lost? I'm like, I've lost nothing, but I've gained a baby. I've gained everything. So I don't look at this as a loss. I also look at it as a wonderful opportunity to practice flexibility and accepting my body in all stages and being flexible with I've said this many, many times. I really do believe that women's bodies are meant to alter and change, and it happens once a month. You know, we feel bloated, then we feel lean. We've got to practice and be more, I feel like, accepting of the fluidity of the process in our bodies, but also of pregnancy. It's such a gain. I've lost nothing. So when I discuss things like this, of like, my body composition has changed, I'm not like, how can I get back? It's like, I still have like two more trimesters. Like, I'm not getting back in anytime soon. And that's not where my mental energy should even remotely be. Right? There are sometimes when life happens, and I'm not talking about pregnancy here, I'm talking about anything. Like, there's a loss of a loved one. There's a traumatic experience. There's a loss of a future that you thought you'd have, and now you're going through a mourning that of acceptance. Any type of life change, I think, should help us practice being mentally, emotionally, and physically flexible. There are times where I'm going to look leaner, and then there's going to be other times where I'm like, I feel a pull of, oh, keep going to the gym, stay strong, keep a healthy lifestyle. But right now, you've got to focus on, I've had this where it's like, you've got to focus on a little bit more on this child or this relationship, or these things need to take precedence. And my body may fluctuate during that. I just look at it as like, okay, this is a practice of just like allowing myself to be flexible with life. Okay. So I think it's important to just let you, like, to say that out loud and to let you know, when I say my body composition is changing, I'm not like, well, now I don't have any worth because I have more body fat and less muscle, and now I don't think, you know, I have anything to contribute or I'm beautiful or whatnot. That's not what that means. What it means is that life is calling my mental energy in another direction. And, you know, for a time period, I couldn't get into the gym, but now I can. And I'm going to go, not so I look a certain way, because guess what? Over this 9 months, I'm not looking a certain way, right? I've lost all the like, I'm not going to have a lean stomach over the next. So it is literally, I am not going right now to look a certain way. It is, I'm going to remain healthy and strong for myself and my baby, because there are great benefits that they have seen in those women who are able to stay even a little active. There are wonderful benefits that they are seeing in the health of that child. And so I do it for me and I do it for baby. But I'm not doing it to look a certain way right now. So I was sharing a lot of this, and I shared that my body composition has changed and fat is increased and muscle size has decreased. I haven't lost all my muscle, but there's a decrease that I can definitely see when I look in the mirror. And so I had somebody message me and say, wait, but you said that after a week, you're not going to lose, you know, muscle, but now you're saying you've lost muscle. So what is it? So let's talk about a few of these topics. When we refer to muscle size, we can be referring to hypertrophy. There are different types of hypertrophy. So typically, sometimes people will talk about sarcoplasmic hypertrophy. Have you ever heard them say sarcoplasmic or myofibular? Typically, when they say sarcoplasmic hypertrophy, that seems to be focusing more on an increase in the muscle glycogen storage. So that means glucose is going to, and the amount of carbs, because, you know, glucose, carbs, pretty much same thing, right? Same thing. So the amount of carbs that you have can influence even the look and size of your muscle. So sometimes people will go through like keto diets and they'll lose a lot of body fat. And then when, and they can do a DEXA. I remember an influencer doing a DEXA at the end of this keto diet. And she was like, oh, I haven't gained any muscle. In fact, this is saying that I've lost muscle. I don't get it. And then she reversed out of the keto. She started introducing carbs again. And she's like, whoa, in like a month, I've put on 5 pounds of muscle. And everybody, because that's what her DEXA said. And everybody's like, whoa, like, okay. this is what worries me about social media is I'm like, okay, if you don't know how to read DEXAs and you don't know what's going on, then I don't know if you should be using them. And I don't know if you should be posting them to the public because you're not giving education behind it. You're not. So it kind of is frustrating for me. But what happened there is she had a decrease in glycogen storage because she wasn't eating as many carbs. So I'm sure when she did her DEXA, she did see a decrease in muscle, but this was sarcoplasmic. This was glycogen storage, right? Because her glycogen storage had been depleted more and she wasn't filling it up with carbs, with, you know, glucose and water. So that's what she was seeing. And then all of a sudden she reintroduces carbs and she's also lifting weights. And where's that going to go, y'all? Well, that is going to be a beautiful thing for your muscles. You're going to fill right up and you're going to look so good. I mean, anybody who's ever done a bodybuilding competition, this is what you do. You refill before the show so that you look your peak and best. You are just full. And that is they top you off through this process. Through using carbs, they're topping you off and you just come in looking really nice and full. So, you know, to bodybuilders, this is something that they know inherently. It's like, oh yeah, I know I can get a little bit fuller, look a little bit better post-carb day when I'm just topped off, right? So that is sarcoplasmic hypertrophy. And what we're seeing a lot of, because studies have shown after 2 weeks, you're really not of detraining. So somebody who's been lifting weights and then they go and do 2 weeks of detraining, and go ahead in the notes, I'm going to put a ton of different studies that point to these things. So we have a ton of studies on this, but 2 weeks of detraining didn't show any noticeable muscle loss in that time frame. Now, sometimes I will have people say, like, after a vacation, or I felt this way after a vacation, they're like, oh, I wasn't working out. This was like a 7 to 14 day vacation or whatnot. I haven't been training. And I did notice that I didn't seem as full. So a lot of researchers, I believe this too. I really do believe what we're seeing is more of a depletion in glycogen storage. We're not seeing myofibular loss. Okay. So that's another term that you may hear, myofibular hypertrophy. So what are myofibrils? If you were to Google and look up a muscle cell, okay, you're going to see, it looks like they're rod-like organelles of the muscle cell. Okay, that's what myofibrils are. So skeletal muscles are composed of long tubular cells. These are muscle fibers. And these cells contain many chains of myofibrils. Okay, so when we're talking about myofibrillar hypertrophy, we're talking usually about this increase of myofibrils. So when we're looking at real muscle loss, we're not looking at depletion of glycogen stores. Okay, that's usually what you see 2 weeks, maybe even 3 weeks. Past that, maybe 3+, and we'll talk about what influences that, at what rate you would really start losing this. In this regard, real muscle loss, we're talking about myofibrillar, okay? So 1, 2, maybe even 3 weeks, are you really seeing muscle loss? No, probably just that glycogen storage going down. And you can quickly fill that back up. Okay. So today when I was sharing my stories, I was saying that I'm actually going to be tracking. I haven't tracked for a while, but I'm going to track at maintenance and I'm going to really increase my carbs. Why? Well, it's because of what I just barely explained to you about the sarcoplasmic hypertrophy. I really want to top off my glycogen stores. So I have seen this depletion. I think it's mostly glycogen depletion, but I actually do think it is myofibrillar as well. And I'm not going to freak out about that. Once again, I know about muscle memory, and I know how to get it back. So I'm really not worried about it. It's taken me years and years and years to put it on, yes, but it doesn't take that long. I mean, we can do it, put it back on in weeks. So today I was explaining that I'm going to be, like I said, increasing my carb intake, especially around my workouts, but throughout the day, obviously, as well. I'm going to be going in. I'm going to be, since I haven't been training, I don't want to go in and just destroy myself with volume because I would be so sore. And so, because I'm so detrained at this point. So usually when I go back in after being off for especially this long, like for, I've had surgeries, I've had pregnancies, like labor and delivery that I've then taken time off, right? So what I do when I go back in is I do just this with my nutrition, make sure my protein is high, make sure my carbs are really high. And then I do something called incomplete rest method. And I'm going to train more in the shortened contracted position. Think of like a squat would be a lengthened position for the glutes, a glute bridge or a cable kickback would be focusing on the shortened contracted position. Okay. Leg extension, shortened contracted position, dumbbell Y raises. That would be the delt, medial, delt, contracted, shortened position. I'm going to be choosing those so that I don't get too sore. And so that I can also, I'll do like 8 to 10 reps and then rest for 15 to 30 seconds and then do another 8 to 10 reps. And I'll actually do like 6 to 8 sets of that. And they're fast workouts. So it's usually like half an hour, I'm done. And I usually sip on some dextrose carbs during and then post, I get another hit of carbs. And this is a really great way that you can refill these glycogen stores pretty quickly. Now, you don't have to do that. You can just do a little bit higher volume. I just don't like being super, super sore when I first go in. And so if you train high volume in lengthened positions, you're probably going to be getting more sore. So if you go in and do more of like the short and contracted, that's going to help prevent that as well. But anyway, so that's how I'm going to be training. That's my nutrition. But let's go back to, well, then how do we prevent this myofibrillar hypertrophy loss? Like that's really the atrophy that we're worried about. And once again, I always tell people, I just don't think you should be too worried about it. But let's go over the studies and what they're showing. So typically we're seeing like a three to four weeks plus where we're thinking, okay, this is now going into myofibular muscle shrinking or atrophy. But once again, there's a few things that go into this, right? A few things that can help lessen it or increase it. So if you think about everything that contributes to building muscle, you know, you've got to have good training and good training volume, right? So that's going to help. If you stop doing training, well, then obviously 3+ weeks, we can see atrophy. But what if you can do a little bit of training? Is that going to reduce it? Yes. In fact, we have studies, a study showing that reducing volume by 1/9 allowed for muscle maintenance up to 7+ months. Okay. Now, this was for those that were under 60 and older. They have a higher degree of atrophy. And so they probably need a more volume, not just 1/9 to maintain. But so what does that look like? 1/9. Well, if you're going in lifting 4 times a week, doing like upper body, lower body splits, it's like the easiest way to really set up a training program. Then you could technically, if you just do body weights at home, even high rep, pushing to that burn, that failure, you can be maintaining. So you don't even really need to go into the gym. You can be doing a lot of body weight at home that can help you maintain the muscle that you've worked so hard for. So once again, I want you to think about this as a gradient. It's not like, well, I'm not doing what I was doing before, so therefore I'm going to lose all my muscle. That's not it at all. It's not that black and white. It's this gradient of you can actually just do 1/9 of the volume and you're going to maintain. It's way easier to maintain muscle than to build muscle. Okay. So just that is going to help. Another thing that will help is just getting up and walking and doing regular daily activities. There is a huge difference between those who stop training plus are on bed rest versus those that stop training but can continue to just move around, just keeping overall activity levels high. So a lot of times when people come to me and they say, well, I'm getting a surgery. I'm not going to be able to train for 6 weeks. What do? I always tell them, walk, walk. More than likely, your surgery will still allow for you to walk. If you can't walk, let's say it was like a knee surgery, ankle, lower body, even if you can go into the gym, a lot of times they have machines where you just use your arms. So just get in there and just use your arms. Then there are those times where it's like, no, I can't do anything. I can't, you know, use any type of those machines. But sometimes they still allow like the walking around. And that is what I tell people. You know, the population that faces the most and the quickest atrophy are astronauts. When they go into space and there's no gravity, it is absolutely incredible the amount of atrophy. But we can mitigate a lot of that just by continuing to get up and walk around. Another thing too is nutrition and protein. So our bodies are in this constant state of breaking down protein and building it back up. Okay. So you don't want to end the day by being in a net negative protein state. That means we haven't built it back up. I think of it as a wall. I don't know why, but I always think of it as a wall. And if you just keep the wall the same level, then you're just going to be maintaining. You know, if you get enough protein, we can build. If you don't, if the wall keeps getting shorter and shorter, that's when you're in the net negative state. And that's where we heighten the chances of atrophy, especially if we're in a calorie deficit too, because that can increase and have negative impacts on muscle protein synthesis when we're not getting enough protein too. So it's those two things really combine. So post-surgery, I tell people, make sure that protein is still sufficient, that you're not trying to be in some crazy calorie deficit, because you can't train to counter any of that. So if you want to maintain muscle, then stay as close to maintenance, have enough protein, and walk. Just move as much as you healthily can. One of the reasons why I said I actually do think that mine wasn't just glycogen storage depletion was actually because of the amount of bed rest that I was on. It was literally, I nailed all three of those. Wasn't even trying. Just nailed them. That's how good I am. Protein, I was having such massive protein aversions. I wasn't even getting sedentary protein rates. I wasn't even hitting that. I mean, some days like 20 grams, like that was it. And I'm just kind of guessing, because once again, I wasn't tracking during this time, but just kind of guessing from what I was eating that day. I'm like, ooh, I didn't get enough protein with that, right? So really low protein, that in and of itself is going to lead to the negative net protein. And then the fact that I'm not doing any type of training, and then the fact that most of the time I was bedridden. So then what do you do? What do I do, right? Do I sit here and moan and complain that life is over because I lost all that muscle that I worked so hard for? No, I'm back to eating my usual high protein foods. I'm really grateful for that. I still have trouble with chicken. Probably 5 weeks ago, I was sharing on Instagram stories the fact that Costco sells bulk, like shredded rotisserie chicken, and it's awesome just to buy it. We had that in the fridge, and I would dry heave every time I would see it. It was so disturbing. Right now, I'm still having a little chicken aversion, but I'm slowly getting over it. The thought of that rotisserie chicken doesn't make me dry heave, which is, I think, a step in the right direction. But it's still, I can't, it is so weird. It's like this mental block. I could not buy that, and I could not put it into any food that I would eat. I'm still having some aversions there, but for the most part, my other high protein meals I can still enjoy. And I'm back to lifting. Today was my first day really back. I'm excited to be back. I was able to even do a nice 45-minute walk after my lift. I'm just feeling really good. Now, there are debates as to the actual mechanisms in the body that create this and allow for it. But we do know that there are people who literally spend years and years and years building the physique of their dreams. They have something happen where they lose a lot of that muscle tissue. But what's crazy is they are able to gain it back. And at the rate is so fast. that even if I was like, okay, I lost like 5 pounds in muscle, I know that I can put it right back on within a month or two. It'd be really fast, you know, years to gain it, but we'd be able to put it on so much quicker now that it has been there. Now, I did want to share, I forgot to mention these studies, like a few of these studies that I thought were really interesting. This was talking about how mainly like these studies weren't seeing reduction in lean mass until about 6 weeks. So it seems like 4 weeks kind of began. And after 6 weeks, they saw reduction, 42% lean mass. But that's very deceiving. Let me explain why. The other study was 8 weeks, lost 52%. Now, the study, like I said, sounds really scary. Like I'm going to lose 50% of my muscle. Like that's not actually what it was. What they were saying was they took some newbies and they trained them for like 8 weeks. And they saw an increase in 10% muscle mass. Then after that, they went another 8 weeks detraining. So they weren't allowed to train anymore. And by the end of the 8 weeks, they saw 5% of that gone. So they lost that 50% that they'd put on, right? So that's what that means there. So, but once again, like I said, muscle memory, we're seeing these things so quickly coming back on. So anything that you do lose because you have to take a few months off of training, like I said, don't be frustrated or disheartened, because one, you needed the surgery, right? You needed that. And so this is a gain, because you gained the benefits of that surgery. And then within a few months, it's like, it doesn't matter. The muscle's back. The muscle's back. Just get back to maintenance, get back to eating enough protein, start training hard again. And you're going to be just fine. So hopefully this episode has been helpful. One, to really just get rid of a lot of the fear behind, if life hits and you have to step away from training, it's okay. You're going to be fine, right? Like, you know what you need to do. Get back in the gym. Start working hard. Just put your head down. I just want to strongly emphasize this. Like, our mental energy, it's, at least this is how I feel for me, it's sacred. And I can't waste it on things that don't really matter. Okay. So think about that. Like, don't waste mental energy on things outside of your control, things that don't matter. Instead, take all of that. Take all of that that you would usually put towards worrying, which doesn't do anything. Take all of that mental energy and put it towards what will bring the change that you want. Okay, I hope that that's your biggest takeaway from this. But anyways, you guys have an incredible week. I just want to thank so many of you for your touching messages that I've received on Instagram and on Be Strong, my community. And thank you so much for being our cheerleaders throughout this process of pregnancy, the in vitro process, the infertility. It's extremely draining and heartbreaking. So thank you so much for those that have reached out and supported us through this. You guys have a wonderful week.